Welcome to the Maintenance Mavericks podcast, where we talk about trends in maintenance, reliability, and asset operations. I'm Ryan. I'm the CEO of Upkeep and also the host for today's podcast. For today, I'm super excited to welcome John Oskin to the podcast. John is the CEO of Sage Clarity Solutions. Sage actually provides leading edge solutions for the next generation of manufacturing supply chain enterprises. It's been developing solutions to enable enterprises for the future. A little bit more about John. He has more than 20 years of manufacturing and supply chain experience. He was also the founder of both Informance International and Factoryware Inc. He started his career at GE and spent 12 years driving manufacturing excellence, where he doubled the output at a single facility and influenced GE's improvements initiatives globally. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today, John?
Hi, Ryan. Nice to talk to you today and nice to talk to your audience.
All right. So the way that we always kick this podcast off is, have you share a little bit more about your journey? What got you into the space? You know, you spent 12 years over at GE, you know, 20 years in the space. What got you into this like maintenance, reliability, operations space? And what inspired you to start, you know, the company that you're building today?
So this is my third company, as you mentioned, two prior companies. My last company was acquired by a major ERP company, and I really started Sage Clarity to create technologies for the next generation manufacturing enterprise. So, you know, so what does that mean? So if you think about today's workforce, you know, everybody has a phone in their hands. So everything we do is, you know, mobile friendly. And then really the applications that we've developed are really around accelerating data and providing richer information for the shop floor. The founding story of my first company was we doubled the output, as you mentioned, over the course of about 15 months. The operator on the floor was just telling me about all these oil leaks on the floor. And that was the biggest problem. And then as she's telling me this story, you know, she has to reset the machine, hits these three buttons. And I was like, well, what about, you know, that machine jam over there? And she's like, well, that's no big deal. I hit these three buttons, it resets, and then we go on. But man, those oil leaks. And then I started looking at the data and, you know, she was resetting that machine, you know, like 80 times a day and not realizing it. And so it was these small, you know, interruptions in the process that were just eating our lunch. So I embarked on starting my first company around data collection and OEE data collection specifically to really get our arms around where, you know, where the problems were. So that was the impetus for starting my first company.
And so I know you focused a lot on OEE as like the central singular most important metric for manufacturing. Is OEE the most important metric that every single, you know, department should be looking at and focused on?
It's a pretty important metric, but as much as people like to think that OEE is this end-all metric, it's not. People also think that OEE is a universal metric that, you know, is calculated the same way, and it's not. Most companies have slight variations on their OE calculations. There's something called 24/7 OEE, which is really, you know, accounts for every minute of the day. And then if I'm a plant manager, I'm usually being measured on, you know, when I'm scheduled or on how am I doing. So there's different variants of that kind of OE calculation on that basis. But it's one measure, you know, and there are a number of other measures used in supply chain, but it's a pretty good measure for, you know, how an asset's performing. So, yeah.
And so oftentimes I feel like I see OEE be used for operations, which is a very much like right here, right now, today kind of metric. You could see it on a dashboard. You could see it change up or down by a percentage point, you know, by the minute, by the second. But then when you extend that metric to, let's call it like a maintenance team or a reliability team, it's harder to see the impact of OEE on the day-to-day. For example, you know, the work that we do, you know, for a maintenance team, oftentimes we have to take equipment offline. So it affects the metric in a negative way, but for hopefully long-term benefit. But it's hard to see that in, you know, the long-term benefit when you're being tracked and measured, you know, essentially by the second on this dashboard that could be, you know, displayed on the plant floor. I'd be curious, do you have any like suggestions on like how to reconcile these differences between maintenance and operations team looking at OEE?
Sure. So first of all, it's not about the number. It's about the losses against the number. So, you know, industry average for OEE is about 62%. And depending on the industry, you go to oil and gas and it's upwards to 90. You go to pharmaceutical operations and it's as low as 20 or 30%. So there is a big range, but, you know, overall, it's about 62%. So with that being said, it's not about 62%. It's about, you know, the 38%. It's about stratifying where the rest of the number, you know, the breakdowns have come from. Some of those are maintenance related. Some of those are material related. Some of them are related to production planning. So organizations will typically align, you know, large organizations will align their pillars, their maintenance pillars around, you know, different pieces of that. But from a maintenance professional perspective, you know, that the piece that they can control are specific, you know, machine breakdowns. And then in your example, where you have to take a machine offline to repair it, that can affect OEE. And that's where I've seen the more progressive organizations, what they will do is, let's just say that plan maintenance for the first 3 years of a company that's embarking on an OE journey, they will exclude plan maintenance, meaning they're going to take it out of the calculation because they know that doing plan maintenance is the right thing to do. But there is a cost associated. There's a time cost associated with that. But they're going to pull it out of the calculation initially. And then 3 years into the journey, they're going to put it back in because they want to kind of know that, you know, are we spending, you know, 2 hours a week? Are we spending 20 hours a week on planned maintenance activities? And then when they do start kind of putting it back into the calculation, then you start comparing it with other KPIs around that asset's performance that will help justify the 10 hours a week that they are spending on maintenance. But the idea is not to penalize an organization by making, you know, by having it in the calculation too early so that people sort of get deflated on pursuing their maintenance initiatives.
I mean, actually, there's two things that you mentioned that really stood out to me. One was like actually stratifying out, you know, all the different reasons for, you know, let's call it downtime or taking equipment offline for whatever reason, whether it's a, you know, maintenance issue, planned maintenance breakdown, or is it like a procurement or inventory problem? And then the second thing that I also heard from you that I thought was, you know, really good was like, you know, how do you calculate OEE? Do you use the 24/7 model or do you, you know, structure in a way that gives you and the team some flexibility that has some room for planned maintenance in there in that calculation?
And further to that point, in a lot of organizations, it's not just one number. In other words, they actually will calculate it two ways. So it's not, they're not trying to choose one or the other. Corporate will use a 24/7 definition of OE, which is sometimes called TEEP. And then at the plant level, they're using this other variant, which is, again, when I'm scheduled to run, how am I doing? So they don't make them choose. They actually calculate both and they serve two different purposes. One serves corporate purpose, because if you're trying to figure out, do I need to buy a new line, a new machine, et cetera, you want to kind of know what that ultimate capacity number looks like, as opposed to just, you know, machine performance.
I mean, maybe on that topic, like what have you seen like the best companies do as it relates to maintenance reliability and also like, you know, essentially absorbing that cost of taking an equipment offline to run maintenance? Like, what have you seen the best organizations do to really justify like, this is worth it?
I think that the best organizations these days are getting really good at digitizing their factories. So they're starting to collect a lot of data to justify some of these decisions. So that's probably, you know, we've seen this trend past couple of years. And so that's probably the starting point, is just, you know, starting to get a lot more data about their assets, even beyond OEE. So it could be, you know, pressure, temperature information, centerlining data, all of that information. And the closer you can get it to real time, you know, even better. And then storing that and either putting it into a data lake or tying it into other systems for usage. But I guess it's just collecting a lot of data.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point. I feel like, you know, with all the sensors and IoT devices and even, you know, onboard equipment, PLC, SCADA systems, like there's more data than ever. And I think, you know, what we're going to see over the next 5-10 years is just this continued like consumption / retrieval of data that our equipment can give us, can tell us. You know, on this token, like what we've also seen a big struggle with, you know, for a lot of, you know, people in the industry is that, you know, they have all this data, but they don't know what to do with it, which sure. I feel like is a very, very, very common problem. Any advice for, you know, listeners listening to this podcast, struggling with just like too much data, not knowing what to do with it or how to utilize it?
So yes, we actually ran a series of articles a couple of years ago called 50 KPIs to 10. And the idea is this, that the more data you collect, actually the fewer KPIs you need to run the business. So if you're collecting a lot of static data, you might have 50 or even 100 KPIs, you know, that people will try to, you know, measure the plant by, if you will. However, when you start getting to real-time data, you can take those 50 KPIs and cut them down to 10 or 15. Which seems counterintuitive, but the reason is that when you start getting real-time data, you know you don't need as many KPIs to manage the business. Now, what you do need to do though is you do need to kind of reconcile what I call primary and secondary KPIs. So a secondary KPI gets rolled up into a primary KPI, so you end up kind of grouping some things together. But that's kind of what helps make it more manageable. So, you know, when people are kind of going down that static to real-time journey, there's a little bit of a process that we recommend that they go through to kind of actually get them to a smaller set of KPIs, but richer, that more valuable KPIs, because it's all based on real-time data.
Yeah. I mean, the real-time feedback is so incredibly important. I think, you know, one thing that we always press, you know, our customers is just the ability to iterate, the ability to improve, the ability to change is so important. Yeah. And I feel like that oftentimes determines, you know, business's success or department's success or failure. Yeah. It's just the ability and speed to change. And I feel like with real-time dashboards, reports, like, you can see numbers move in real time. You can see whether you're, you know, on a path towards falling off a cliff or, you know, you're on the right path or not. Yep. And the earlier that you can detect this, you can switch gears and say, you know, I'm turning left versus right. I'm turning right versus left. It's so, so important. Obviously, like with all this data, I'm actually getting very deep into AI, John. I'm getting very, very deep into this like AI space. And obviously there's this whole ChatGPT, the OpenAI stuff going on. Like it's very, very interesting. And when I reflect back and even like 5 months ago, someone asked me about AI. I've been like, yeah, hey, we're decades. I don't even think this is going to be close to my lifetime that we see any meaningful impact of AI, because the data set wasn't there, wasn't structured. But then obviously this whole ChatGPT thing came out 5 months ago. My entire perspective has changed.
For sure. Yep.
You know, as it relates to, you know, our industries, maintenance, operations, reliability, manufacturing, like, you know, how do you see this like rise of AI affecting, you know, our industry and, you know, people that work in our field?
So we see value when AI is coupled with a digital twin concept. For those of you that may or may not be familiar with what a digital twin is, it's a virtual representation of a physical thing at a high level. What it means for asset management is where we can kind of take all those rich data streams associated with asset performance and then replicate that data in a way that can be processed by AI engines. And so we've got a digital twin piece of technology that that does that to provide what we call intelligent root cause analysis. So what it does is it takes complicated production lines, so not standalone machines, where if I've got an assembly line where I've got a sequence of operations, and it will it can analyze station by station, essentially who's driving the downtime on that line, kind of coming back to our OE discussion, if you will, which on complicated production lines is not easy to do. And so that's one component of our digital twin platform, is to be able to kind of then replicate that and actually kind of replay it in a way that can help engineers understand that. But then the next thing we're looking at is then taking that and feeding into an AI engine for new learnings. But it's going to change, AI is changing every industry very quickly.
It's kind of wild, like how fast all of this is just like, hit and changed. I mean, so many different professions, especially like writing anything digital. One thing that I've always like, that I'm still on the fence about right now, John, is like, I feel like AI has changed a lot of roles in professions that are primarily like digital, like primarily digital based, so moving bits and bytes versus atoms. And when I think about our industry, yes, there are like robotics and manufacturing plants, but like bringing AI into the physical world, I feel like is another big chasm to leap beyond just like the digital world. So like turning, let's call it like text into speech and, writing paragraphs and essays. Like I just always felt like there's this big leap between bits and bytes versus, physically moving atoms. I don't know if you feel the same way.
Well, I think there's a lot to be learned from AI, which is different, by the way, that, from machine learning. So machine learning was kind of a precursor to AI in a lot of ways, but the big misconception around machine learning was people just thought that I could just feed all this data into a machine learning algorithm and glean all this brilliant insight. And we did a lot of work in that area. And what you quickly realize in manufacturing is that you actually have to have a data model that can use the machine learning data appropriately. And that takes time and it takes expertise. It takes expertise both at the technology level, but then also at the industry level, and then even at the client level. So, if I've got a client that has 10 plants, I may have a machine learning algorithm that maybe works in one plant, but maybe doesn't work in the other plants. So that was some of the learnings that came out of machine learning. AI is different, but I think it's going to be faced with some of this similar headwinds as people start moving beyond some of the novelty things you hear about with AI, and then moving them into real business cases of, how are we going to use this technology to extract, $2 million of savings out of my business or whatever.
All right. I'm very interested and excited to see what happens, and hopefully it doesn't kill us all. I was kind of reading in one of your previous interviews, John, that you said the best two pieces of advice that you received were to be authentic and to control your own destiny. I kind of want to ask you, what are some of the biggest challenges that organizations face when trying to, extract actionable insights from this like vast pools of data that they collect? How can organizations stay authentic and control their destiny at the same time?
Well, I think the biggest mistake is people just collecting data for no clearly understood purpose, right? So just collecting data for the sake of collecting data. And that maybe goes into a data lake, and then people don't really know what to do with it. So that's probably one of the biggest mistakes. So I think it's purposefully thinking about what is the kind of data that's going to be meaningful to the business. So that's probably one of the biggest mistakes I see in terms of this vast amount of data collection that's going on. And then I think on the technology side, what helps manage that is use of, you know, proactive alerts and exception management. So, you know, business intelligence applications, for example, were popular several years ago, but nobody has the time to really kind of pour through a bunch of data anymore. So having applications that, you know, either through AI eventually that can glean these insights, or at a minimum, just, you know, being able to have, you know, the proactive alerts that when things are going awry, you know, quickly that you can react to. I think that, you know, that has an impact.
All right. I appreciate all the advice here, John. I really appreciate you sharing all of your knowledge as well. The way that we always end these shows is to do this quick fire set of questions, leave our audience with a few extra golden nuggets of information, where I kind of ask a question and get your thoughts and responses in 30 seconds or less.
Okay. All right.
All right. First one is, what do you feel like is the biggest misconception about, you know, our industry, maintenance, reliability, operations, manufacturing?
I think the biggest misconception is that, you know, data alone is going to solve your problems. And I think there still is a human element for understanding that data and using the data.
What are some resources that you learn from to stay up to date?
So from a technology perspective, I turned to my CTO for the latest on IoT technology. So he's our brain trust. For inspiration, there's two books that I turned to, and these are not new books. Crossing the Chasm is one of the best business reads I've come across. And I tend to reread that every 2 or 3 years, actually. And Blue Ocean Strategy. Those are kind of the two reads that I tend to kind of, you know, revisit. So great books from a business perspective and growing a business and applying those learnings.
I definitely second Crossing the Chasm. It's another one of my regular reads. And also I got to check out Blue Ocean now. So
yeah, Blue Ocean Strategy. Fewer people have heard about it, but it's a great book. What I love about Crossing the Chasm is that most business books have one idea and then they write 300 pages on one idea. Yeah. And Crossing the Chasm has many ideas, as you know. So,
yeah. All right. How about the biggest takeaway that you hope our listeners are going to, you know, take from today's discussion?
I'm going to ask your audience this question, or they should ask themselves this question, which is, you know, what can I do today to advance my asset management digitization strategy? Is it introducing meter readings to the systems? Is it adding OEE monitoring to the plant? Is it developing a digital twin strategy around asset management and the data associated with that? So once you can answer those questions, you know, get started with the pilot, you know, learn and, you know, course correct.
All right. I love it. Just start today, one step in front of the other. All right. How about, can you share with all of our listeners the different ways that they can connect with you, John, and, you know, follow you on your journey?
Sure. So my email is just john.oskin@sageclarity.com. You can, you know, reach out to me directly, reach out to me through LinkedIn, you know, hit our website if you want to just see some of the technologies and the things that we do in this space, just sageclarity.com. You know, looking forward to connecting with your listeners.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, John, for joining us. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning for today's episode of the Maintenance Mavericks podcast. Again, my name is Ryan. I'm the CEO and founder of Upkeep. You can also connect with me. I'm very active on LinkedIn. Shoot me an email at ryan@upkeep.com. I hope everyone enjoyed today's episode, and I look forward to connecting with everyone soon. Until next time, thanks again, John. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks.